This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat and welcome to Night School, the show that explores key themes in history, the social sciences and the humanities. Together with Sharat Kutin, we critically unpack theories, frameworks and social phenomena to better to understand how society works. Each week we discuss a classic text, theme or an idea that we hope to shed light on the world around you. Sharat can't be here this week, but we are joined by two architects. They are Nazmi Anwar and Fu Hui Ping. And they are a part of this collective called Framing the Common. And they are currently conducting an exhibition that will last till the 28th of June. And we're here to pick their brain and discuss the ideas and the essence and the objective of this project. And in the process, learn a thing or two about architecture and KL. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Good to be here.
Let's start with what this group is about. So you're called Framing the Common. And my understanding of it is that you have a project in Malaysia, but you're also international. Mm-hmm. So give us an introduction.
Well, basically, Framing the Common is a collective research project by a group of like-minded architects. And we are based in different cities. Namely in Bogota, Tehran, Mumbai and KL. So basically, these people who are in different cities are friends of mine, colleagues when we were doing our masters at the Berlage Institute in the Netherlands. So after finishing our studies, we found that we really enjoyed working together. And having gone back to each of our different countries, we decided to, in a way, continue working together. So Framing the Common is a project. It's a project device as an excuse to allow us to continue to work together. Mm-hmm. And the subject of this particular research project are the common spaces of apartments.
Interesting. Why the common? I mean, the word common sounds common. We don't really think of it as being very theoretically interesting. But why is it important to frame the common?
So maybe I can start to describe a bit what does it mean here mm-hmm. with the word common for us. So in a collective living typology, building type, for example, the apartment, mm-hmm. Spaces within each apartment unit are actually private spaces. Mm-hmm. Whereas the staircases, the corridors, the circulation spaces are actually the common spaces. So apart from that, for example, the entrances, or the car park or even a playground, if there is any, these are also considered common spaces where it is shared among the residents in the apartment. Mm-hmm. So this is what we mean by common here. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But why is it important to rethink it? What's the issue really? I mean, okay, I go into a building, it's going to be a playground, it's going to be the stairs. Mm-hmm. Problem solved, right? We have those things and I can just retreat in my private spaces and that's it. What is the significance of thinking about this differently?
I think in the context of this project, what made us really interested in the notion of the common is the fact that, let's say, to zoom out a bit from the common in the context of the apartment, if you look at, let's say, how cities globally are growing, you see an erosion of the common in the face of this kind of very extremely fast development, and where you see, let's say, a capital leading towards the accumulation of more and more private property, mm-hmm. To the extent that the common, which is a territory or a zone which is shared by all, is becoming more and more eroded. Mm-hmm. And I think in the context of the apartment, we find this condition the same. The fact that, let's say, when you design an apartment, you would focus more on the units, the living unit, the comfort of the family or the individual, whereas the common elements, staircases, corridors, which are, let's say, collective spaces, mm-hmm. which provides, in a way, a similar experience to all the inhabitants, are often pretty much neglected mm-hmm. or becomes a very peripheral issue. So I think one of the intentions of this project is to look at this kind of neglected aspect in the context of housing, but perhaps to then also reflect on this bigger issue of the erosion of the common at the scale of the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. And that's one thing I can't help noticing as well, that more and more you have malls and luxury projects, offices or apartments being built, and they're taking up whatever little remaining green spaces there are. If you look at the priorities of the city's sort of developmental aspirations, you know, they're not public parks or museums or galleries. What we get instead are typically spaces that are very friendly to developers and not very considerate of what public interest might be.
Yeah, actually, now you just mentioned the word public. So like, as we described earlier, like we try to think of common spaces as a space that is neither public nor private. Mm. So if you start to think or talk about the issue of park, it's I think those are public spaces where it's made accessible or available to everyone. But common spaces in the case of apartment are spaces that's not entirely public, but is shared by these people within the community. Mm-hmm. So
I guess in that sense, the common is perhaps a bit more specific to a certain group, whereas the public is pretty much. But the problem with the public is that the fact that you say that it's public, but then by saying it does not mean that it's immediately accessible to all, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, you think that shopping mall is a private property but has this public space, but I think it's quite symptomatic of how this issue of I think what David Harvey described as a accumulation by dispossession, where let's say the parts of the city becomes accumulated in the hands of the few, right? Like let's say it becomes accumulated by the developers or by the rich people who can afford this kind of properties and luxury. So in that sense, the spaces of the city becomes a commodity and becomes a form of luxury. Whereas, I mean, by right, it should be the right of all. I mean, of all the citizens, irregardless of your, you know, socioeconomic class or background.
Yeah, I think if you talk about public spaces, I mean, take KLCC Park as an example. People like us, like the normal citizen, we may think that it's a public space, but actually it is a open space that is privately owned. Mm-hmm. So like who maintain and who manage and who actually own the land defines like how public it is. So, I mean, we all know that we can't go there and camp there or just picnic by the park. Yeah. So this, maybe because we have very few open public space around, and all this, for example, even KL Park, it's not a public space, although it looks really open.
Yeah,
so they are
actually
private. I mean, the guard will stop you if you are entering with cameras and whatnot.
Let's try to recap that. Can you think of examples of open public spaces that the average KL citizen might know?
That Layang Layang Park.
Well, there's this Layang Layang Park in Kepong. Which is very nice, actually. It's this kind of very big, well, not that big, but sizable, sprawling park, quite close to, let's say, very dense urban developments of housing. And it's actually in the middle of this kind of zone between developments which are, let's say, catered towards the more affluent. And also you have kind of social housing next to it. So I think it's a very interesting case of where this kind of common spaces, this kind of very shared space, somehow provides the platform on which this kind of very different classes of society mix around, right? I mean, so then it becomes this meeting place for the different subsets of the citizens.
Actually, like those Taman Permainan at our housing area, those are
Open public
spaces.
And a lot of things happen there. I mean, community building, a shared sense of community identity, all those things are fostered through engagements in these spaces. And without that, you're not going to have the kind of, you know, synergy or cohesion needed to maintain a sense of belonging. Now, you are trying to pursue this discussion, particularly in this place called Razak Mansions, right? So tell us a bit about the project and why Razak Mansions.
Razak Mansions is this social housing project or housing for the low-income classes in Sungai Besi. So it was built by DBKL, or what was then, what DBKL was then before it became DBKL, which is the city authority. So Razak Mansions was built as this kind of almost a transitory housing where populations moving from the countryside to the city are meant to, let's say, start their lives there and then later on move out. But the way that this particular apartment buildings are designed, especially in regards to how it comes together within this very large expanse of common spaces, actually create this kind of very different situation from the rest of the city. Hmm. So if you were to go there now, you would find, you would almost not realize that it's actually just 10 minutes away from the center of the city. Mm. And even the mix of, let's say, ethnicity that you find there is, I think, pretty much reflective of what the ethnic mix was in the 60s, when there was this kind of idea of common progress, of a modern, very progressive Malaysia, right? Mm-hmm. And I think this goes back to what you were saying before, where this kind of the availability of these common spaces somehow allowed this kind of very this mix of different kind of people from different backgrounds to really come together and eventually gel as a community. So I think in a way, this project is a very clear testament to the fact that by providing this kind of spaces for engagement, it does foster a sense of community without, you know, resorting to some form of rhetoric of, you know, a unified this or that.
Now, what's the status of Razak Mansion? I know that it's probably going to be demolished soon. So are there residents right now, or are they in the process of leaving? Can you describe its current condition?
Currently, it is... a new replacement block is currently being constructed next to the existing Razak Mansion. So this new block called One Razak Mansions. So all the current residences in the in the project now would eventually shift into this new project. I think the new project is finishing end of the year, and afterwards, sometime next year, the existing Razak Mansions would be demolished to make way for a new kind of development, mixed development, which is in tune, perhaps, which is more in tune with the direction that the city is going.
Which doesn't sound very much like good news. But before that, I want to just ask for you to describe what exactly are you doing with the space? Are you mapping the spaces? Are you redrawing or redesigning certain units? Describe the project in particular detail.
Yeah. So locally, like Nazmi earlier explained how this framing the common exists among his three other colleagues from the Netherlands. So locally in Malaysia, Nazmi picked the building Razak Mansion as a case to study. So he has invited some of us, also architects, myself. We have Brian Chi, we have Ashran Bahari, Fazli Kamis and Liana Hasnan. Architects ourselves to be in the team where we are invited to look at common spaces within Razak Mansion from a different angle. Mm-hmm. So say for example, one of our teammates, Brian Chi, during our site visit, while walking along the corridor and the smell of the cooking attracted him, caught his attention. So in our meeting, like after the site visit, he told us that, oh, maybe I would like to look at the common spaces from a more intangible angle, like how Aldo Rossi talked about the spirit of place in the architecture of city. So he says that he wants to come from the memory and smell aspect of the common space. Mm-hmm. So like for myself, I put forward the idea of to the group, the idea of mapping, say, a matrix of inventory of existing common spaces in relation to how it is used now. Mm-hmm. So during our site visit, we can see that at some corridor, it is left untouched or empty, or while some other corridors, you can see people putting chairs or potted plants. Mm-hmm. And some on ground level, they even occupy a bit more of the ground and start planting vegetables.
I see.
Yeah, the idea of this is to try an approach or thinking of the space to help us understand design from a more bottom-up approach, as opposed to our formal education or training in school, where we learn to design from textbooks through theory or principle. It's not something we shouldn't do, but right, I think we might find something from...
My sense is that you want to know the place first, understand its identity, how it feels and smell, and then from there be inspired to really design something and offer back to the community. That's wonderful. I want to pick on more details soon, but for now let's take a break. You're listening to Nazmi Anwar and Hui Ping, both architects representing the collective called Framing the Common, and I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, and this is Night School on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to Night School. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat. This week we are joined by Fu Hui Ping and Nazmi Anwar, both architects representing the collective called Framing the Common. They are represented in four chapters across the world, including Bogota, Tehran, and Mumbai. But they also have an exhibition up to the 28th of June, where they're going to present to the public essentially different ways of thinking about what it means to have a common space. Now, before I want to get into the particulars of this exhibition, can you just tell our listeners the status of the conversation? Is this the kind of conversation that's happening among architects in this country, or is this something left field that's really like unusual and subversive? Characterize the kind of discussions that you're having in relation to the broader discourse happening among architects here.
Well, I wouldn't really call it subversive as such, although maybe some do think about it like that. No, but I think one of the things that we were, let's say, very interested to do this project is because to somehow demonstrate that architecture, I mean, personally, I believe that architecture should no longer be limited to this job of designing buildings. It should be this form of knowledge, this form of cultural production. And when I say cultural production, it means that the architect, in my opinion, should be involved in, let's say, issues, in, let's say, discourses, which perhaps is beyond the typical definition of the architect as someone who provides surveys and who designs buildings. So I think one of the reasons that we as a group decided to do this research is to somehow demonstrate that the architecture knowledge could be used as a form of reflection. So in this case, to reflect on the form or the kind of spaces that we have in the past and which we still have, which will be gone tomorrow, right? I mean, if you think about the idea of the architect as someone who contributes to progress by making, I don't know, 200-story buildings or circular buildings or whatever, I think in this case, we are very conscious that architecture is not only involved in the production of the new, but it also serves as a form of looking back, that you use architecture to look back at how the country was before and in a way where we are heading as a nation.
Mm-hmm. And how have your ideas been received by the broader architectural community? Have the exchanges been very healthy, or are you still waiting for more substantial responses?
I think it's very early still to judge how the responses has been. I think over the last weekend, we had the opening session for the exhibition here in KL. I think we'll talk about that bit more later. And we had this forum discussion involving not only architects, but let's say filmmakers and people who are involved with housing policies. And we found that the conversation was really interesting in that we are actually all looking at the same things. That it's not just the architects looking at, you know, building or the issue of the common, but this issue is also prevalent in other, you know, in socioeconomic theories, and somehow they overlap. So I think that what was interesting about that particular conversation that we had was that somehow architecture in its physical form as a building suddenly becomes this platform for different kinds of different ideas to overlap and to somehow engage.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not very familiar with the process, but is it usually a team effort? Because you have pretty much a band here. What do you bring to the process? You know, what do the diversity of opinions offer to the practice of architecture itself, right? Is it necessarily more improved that you have a collective process? Describe the workflow for us in leading up to this exhibition.
Well, I think it was very interesting that when the four, let's say, representatives from the four cities decided to do this project, it was very clear, at least to me, that I would not want to do this on my own. Perhaps in other cities, the approach is different, in which they do a workshop or they make a call for contributions. But in our case, what I did was to actually really select people who I thought are interesting to work with. So these are all people who I haven't worked with before, but people who I thought would be interesting to work with, well, based on assumptions or based on the projects that they've done before. And what was interesting was that they are all, let's say, have very different interests. Well, our only common interest is, let's say, to do this project, which is beyond designing buildings. But each of us bring, let's say, different perspectives. For example, Liana is a curator, architectural curator. Ashran and Ben is Fazli is very involved in this kind of making the architectural object. Well, I perhaps have a very traditional understanding of what architecture is, and Huiping has a more, I mean, Huiping has done community projects before and has and bring this kind of a more a very open kind of very her interest in this bottom up kind of processes. So I think everybody brings, let's say, really different kind of perspectives to the project, and I believe, of course, that some at certain point it creates a sort of friction. But I think that is how you move forward. And this kind of friction is something that really drove the project forward.
Yeah. So, like earlier, Nazmi mentioned, like how, like architects, like we shouldn't just stop at designing building, like how it looked like and whatnot. So, like what. How some of us decided to be part of the team. It's because, like, out of our 9-to-5 work, producing drawings and building and going to the site, we meet in the evening or over the weekend to talk about things that, about this project, about issues that we think it's important or question that we should ask, which we describe as architecture more than just building design. The thing is, like, all of us, we are architects, but we are all from different offices. So that's what makes it also very interesting for us. And we can come together to talk about issues on a project without a client.
Right.
So it's something where we are not targeting to build something. But then, for us, in a typical office, we do not want an office to end up just producing, a producing house. But if you cannot afford to have a research house in the office itself, so by being part of this project, we think that we should continue to ask questions and to think and to put forward debate. So just now you asked the question about how are other people or the public engaging this this issue, or are they also thinking about this? So the thing is, Nazmi earlier mentioned, told you about the exhibition, and actually it was the first time we exhibit on the project, and actually we launched it last week, and we have almost more than 60 to about 90 people participating. I think it was quite positive, and you can see that all these architects and also maybe some non-architects, people who actually are thinking and working on the project not as an architect. We have people visiting who actually, there are people who wants to record the building because they used to live there.
I see.
Somehow found about the project and they came.
Wonderful.
So like they ask a lot about this project and they are interested. So you can see that there are people who do not only see architecture as building design.
Right.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that you're getting the synergy from not just different architects with different perspectives, but also people, different crafts and interests and values coming into your concerns and trying to enhance it. That's really rich background, you know, in approaching the exhibition. So what can we expect when we do check it out?
Okay, so now the exhibition, we launched it last week on the 28th of May. It's actually at Port Commune, Petaling Jaya. So it's going to be there for a month. So we have like posters of all the different material from all the four cities, including Kuala Lumpur. So there are posters and drawing on the wall. And also each cities actually produce a book, a little booklet to describe more about the project that's happening in the respective city. So other than that, we have another wall where you can see all the thinking process and little notes that we have, like all our meeting notes and the thought processes that gone through. So this, as mentioned, this project, there's no like a product. So, but what we want to share it's to the public is the processes. Like we are asking questions, we do not have the answer, but we would like to ask the question together with everyone else who is interested.
Now, paint a picture for us. I have your brochure here, and there are a lot of like drawings and texts. And at first glance, and maybe I need longer for to really appreciate this, I'm not really sure what's going on. I mean, is that what I'll be seeing if I do go? Just different sketches of floor plans and layouts? Is that really what we can expect?
Well, sort of. But also, again, the point is to have this kind of the artifact of the exhibition Let's say a series of drawings, and one analogous drawing, which combine all the various drawing of the common spaces from all the four cities. So the exhibition or the material on display does not attempt to, let's say, immediately shout out, "This is what I'm about," or "This is what you should understand." But I mean, at first glance, you might not get it. But of course, like Hui Ping mentioned, there's a series of books also in the exhibition as part of the display, which would then allow you to then slow down and really digest the content. So in a way, it's quite similar to the idea that we're trying to look at architecture as a reflection. So the exhibition itself is not meant to be like a fast-paced breeze through a gallery, but it's this kind of drawings which create this, exactly this, give you this question of what is this about, right? Mm-hmm. And in order to then have a deeper understanding, then you go into the text, then you go into the book. So it's not conventional in a way, although it is conventional in a way that it uses the very traditional medium of architectural drawings. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So nothing flashy, no buildings that move or things like that, but right. just architectural drawings.
Sure. No miniature of the Razak mansions.
We have, let's say, parts of model parts of that building. Not the whole thing, but let's say bits and pieces of the elements from the building.
And I'm just being flippant; it's not that important. But I get your point that it is about thinking through the meaning of architecture itself, right? Especially as the circumstances in which we live in are changing.
Yep.
Nobody can remain indifferent. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know much about urban planning or architecture, but I realize that private spaces are getting more and more expensive, and it's pretty much the only kind of space you have nowadays.
Exactly.
So to think that architecture is this, lofty discourse that only belongs to specialists, it's kind of a dangerous, slippery slope and precedent, right? Because I think every citizen must know basically, what goes into the process of making a city and making a house and arranging urban spaces and identity. So I think this is really, really intriguing. Now, you are also exhibiting at the Venice Biennale. So parallel to what's happening at Port Commune is a similar version of this in Venice. Is that correct?
So basically what we have at Port Commune is a copy, not 100% copy, let's say 87% copy of the display that we have in Venice. So the idea is that, I mean, if not everyone could go to the Venice Biennale, which is like the most important architecture exhibition in the world, framing the current issues of the profession, we thought we'll bring it here and somehow make this thing localized, use it as a platform for local discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So not to have that kind of very high level of putting it on an altar as it is in Venice almost, but putting it, let's say, closer to the general public.
Mm-hmm. Now, congratulations, by the way. Is this common for Malaysians to display there? I mean, can you just locate the significance of this achievement for us?
The Venice Biennale, if I may roughly go through it, basically, the Venice Biennale happens every 2 years, obviously, and it's this huge event in Venice. So mainly you would have the main exhibit in the Giardini and in the Arsenale. So where we are having the Framing the Common exhibition, not in the main exhibition itself, but in the Palazzo Bembo, which is a very old Renaissance building, as part of this collateral event organized by the Global Art Affairs Foundation. So during the Biennale, which lasts about 6 months from May until November, the whole city becomes a mixture of, let's say, collateral events. So you have events everywhere. Mm-hmm. You have people talking about things in back alleys, in all the palazzo and things like that. Usually countries participate by invitation. So usually in the Giardini and the Arsenale, you would have the national pavilions representing each country.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, this year, Malaysia is not represented in the exhibition itself. But we don't see our project in any way as representing Malaysia,
mm-hmm.
but we see it as this kind of very international collaboration of projects around the world with common shared interests. And I think that's the way, that you, as you move forward,
perhaps this kind of nationalistic identity of we are Malaysian architects or we are, you know, it's not so important, but it's that you are an architect first and you just happen to be from Malaysia. So if you find, let's say, like-minded colleagues in Bogota or Tehran or Mumbai, therefore you work with them, right? So I think it dissolves this kind of nationalistic boundaries through the fact that you have common interests.
It's like it's not representing Malaysia, but it's done by Malaysians.
All right, unfortunately, we are nearing the end of the show, and it's about that time when we suggest reading material for our listeners. What do you have in mind? Just for us to start thinking about this whole idea of the common or critical architecture. I mean, you mentioned David Harvey earlier. I know there's a lot of literature behind this. Where do we start?
I don't know, for me, I would like to recommend this text called The Right to the City by David Harvey. I think it precluded the book of the same title. I think it was published in the New Left Review or something. So this text basically talks about how urban development is complicit with capital. The fact that projects which is approved or projects which are being built are projects which really promote this idea of surplus values and surplus properties, and therefore create this continuous cycle of capital. So I think that project, that text really talk about how then the common interest and also common spaces are being eroded in the city as a result of this kind of complicitness between capital and development.
Okay, for me, maybe I can share like a quote that is important to me or when I think of a city or a space, which is this phrase by Aldo Van Eyde, where he always said that we should think of a house like a small city and a city like a big house. So similarly, in the apartment, as we talk about the issue of common and whatnot, I think it can be interesting if we start to imagine an apartment like a big house. So including the common spaces. So yeah.
Fascinating stuff. So just repeat some of the details here that you will need to know if you want to check out Framing the Common. It lasts until June the 28th. It's at Port Commune, PJ. And it's a parallel exhibition with the full version that's in the Venice Biennale. And I think one of the six of you will be there any given day. They can look forward to maybe interacting with the people behind this project. I assume you're on Facebook, so we can just type Framing the Common and we'll find a page there. How about Twitter?
Really?
That's where the common is happening these days, online, so you might want to get on board that. But in any case, thank you again, Nazmi Anwar and Fu Hui Ping, for sharing so much with us. I know I've learned a lot, and I hope, and we hope you have too in tuning in. This is Night School on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.